Hello, I'm Katie.
And I'm Leslie.
And we're all booked.
Welcome back to another episode of Sterling Municipal Libraries Podcast, where we talk to you about the books we'd like to recommend.
And Kevin is joining us today to talk about God and Guinness. But before we do that, I wish I could show you guys. He is like decked out in A&M.
It's true.
Paraphernalia.
But like weekend A&M. He's got like a nice casual Hawaiian t-shirt with the A&M and like little flamingos.
I didn't realize there was any other attire that our listenership would be wearing. I mean, isn't everybody wearing their A&M shirt?
Everyone is wearing their A&M flamingo shirts.
Everybody show your A&M tattoo.
Yeah, I think our listeners in Austin may not appreciate that.
But oh, we'll there's a lot of maroon in Austin. There is a lot of maroon in Austin. That other color's not really a color, but we're not going to go there. That's for another podcast.
There you go. So why are we here at work talking about beer today?
We're going to talk about The Search for God and Guinness by Stephen Mansfield.
Sounds good.
Stephen Mansfield's a different kind of guy. He's actually a political writer, and in 2008, he was writing a book on Obama and faith, and he really got turned off by the whole political scene, and he just happened to be in church one day, and the pastor was giving a sermon about Arthur Guinness. And he thought it was going to be about beer. He thought that was kind of strange that that was in church. But it was actually a sermon that had to do with everything that Guinness and the Guinness legacy as a company did for their workers. It was the outreach, taking the talents that God had given them to not only brew a beer of the quality of Guinness, but taking the talents that God had given them and doing great throughout the workers throughout Ireland. So he was so intrigued by the story. He wasn't a beer drinker at all, but he started reading a lot about Guinness and a lot about Arthur Guinness and a lot about what was done, and was so intrigued by the story that he took his own pilgrimage to Ireland to check it out for himself.
Wow. Interesting. So at what time period did Arthur Guinness like start making beers or start his company?
So he was in the 1700s.
Okay.
He actually started Guinness at the famous St. James Gate. That's the plot of land next to the river that is still where their brewery is. It's much bigger now. But at the time, 1759, he bought a small little brewery. Now, he'd been brewing beers for years. So this book starts out and it talks about kind of the history of beer and beer in society, the importance of beer in history, the importance of beers in church, because so many of our religions today want to make this, oh no, you can't drink and you can't dance. Well, the early churches had a lot to do with brewing their own beers, and the monks brewed their own beers, and several religions brewed their own beers. Well, Arthur Guinness came from a family that part of what they did serving others was also brewing beer. So he came up learning the trade from his grandfather, from his father. And in 1759, he chose that as his own profession, and he buys a small brewery at St. James Gate in Dublin, Ireland.
So how did the history of beer and the church get intertwined?
Ooh, that's a good one, because beer was just sought to be a commodity that was accepted by all. It was a medium of trade. It was relaxation. So it was just a source of revenue for a lot of different churches, source of relaxation. And it was something, you know, craft brewing and brewing is even, you know, popular today.
Yeah.
It was back then too. It just wasn't talked about very much. So whether you were the common man or you had your own business or you were a monk or part of a church, there were a lot of people and businesses that dabbled in brewing. It was just a very common thing to do.
And it seems easier to for a local place to brew their own beer than it is to do what we do now, which is ship beer from everywhere. You know, it seems easier to just start it up in your backyard and say, okay, guys, this is the town's beer now.
Well, think of your barbecue contests that are out there. Everyone thinks they make the best barbecue, and I have the best sauce, and I have the best brisket, and I know how to cook it. That's exactly what everyone did back then. They had their own little tweaks or uniquenesses, and here's why my beer is better. And there was a whole process. Of course, it wasn't as mechanical as it is today.
Yeah.
So the whole hops and fermentation, and you had to learn all that, you know, by hand. And yeast wasn't, you know, thought of, you know, Guinness, you know, started putting yeast in there. So everyone was looking for that one unique thing that made your beer better than somebody else's.
Did they talk about any hardships that the company went through? I know you talked about how he gave back once he was doing better and trying to give unto his employees. But are there any moments where he goes through anything difficult that tests him?
Well, I would say, like most small business owners, mm-hmm. it's not perfection the first time you try and do something. So those bumps along the way and the ups and the downs, and this stout didn't come out tasting the way mm-hmm. it was supposed to. And of course, when you say Guinness to me, there's a whole line of Guinness beers, right? Like there is every other beer. But, you know, those of you that are listening, you can't see the book in my hand. But
it's a dark
nice
beer.
Black
yep.
and tan head, this foamy, frothy. I mean, that's Guinness.
That's the one that
that's the one that
of.
Everybody mm-hmm. exactly that we all, in fact, you got that Guinness looking top going on. Oh, Leslie's got going on. For those of you that are just listening, I'm just telling you, Leslie's got it going on today. But that's the beer. And so there were bumps along the way in terms of how they made it, whether it worked, whether it didn't, what was the best way to make the Guinness.
Yeah.
But it didn't dwell on that in the book.
Yeah.
Did they reach any tipping points when they went from kind of a smaller company to, oh my gosh, this is actually gaining momentum and growing?
They did, but, you know, Mansfield talks a little bit about that throughout the book, the evolution of Guinness, you know, through the family, through the different people that took it over,
mm-hmm.
the sons, the grandsons that followed Arthur Guinness. But he actually talks about the family in terms of very interesting family. You kind of fell in three different pots. So there were the people like Arthur Guinness and the people that from the family chose to make brewing and beer their passion, their life. Then there was a portion of the family that grew up and wanted nothing to do with the business, but they were very successful bankers and financiers.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was a portion of the family that his whole family is a family of faith. So the church and religion has always been very strong in the Guinness family. So the third part of the family is those that chose to go into the ministry and to help others. And the interesting part about that is obviously those people don't have much money because you don't get paid a lot to be a minister. So he talks about them in terms of how the family, especially the people in the beer business, as the business grew, obviously they were very wealthy,
mm-hmm.
would have to take on the bills and help the people that were the ministers.
Mm-hmm.
The bankers and the financiers, I'm sure they did fine.
Yeah.
But those are the three buckets of the Guinness family that Mansfield talks about.
Was there anything particularly eye-opening that you learned about Guinness or Arthur Guinness or any of it?
So I liked when they talked about the brewery St. James Gate because as Mansfield takes his own pilgrimage post-2008 when he got, you know, tired of the political scene. Similarly, I just have to say in my family, my grandfather was a stowaway from Ireland. His father stuck him on a boat. He was caught twice. The third time he would have been put in jail, even though he was a young teen. But he wasn't caught the third time, and the boat lands in Brooklyn. And my grandfather gets off, and he becomes a journeyman apprentice. He becomes older. He gets married. He raises his family. My mom's born in Brooklyn. So my whole grandfather's side is Irish. So my mom had never been to Ireland. She'd never seen this place. And so we decided in 2015 to take mom to Ireland. I wish I had read this book before I went.
Oh, yeah.
Because obviously when we started and ended our journey in Dublin, and so we did the Guinness tour, the brewery. And so we've seen the brewery. We poured our own beers. We learned everything they did. So as Mansfield is writing about St. James Gate and the brewery, of course, my mind's flashing back to our own pilgrimage to Ireland where I wanted to show mom where her father was from. His name was Boyle, my mom's maiden name, Boyle. There's a town northwest of Dublin, Boyle. We took mom there. She met people that knew my grandfather and her
mm-hmm.
family.
Oh, wow.
So all that was really, really interesting. So I'm reading the book, and there's so much I'm taking out about what Arthur Guinness and people did and how the brewery grew, but so much of what was going on in Ireland then and how that may have impacted my grandfather and his family just came to me as well.
So the real question is, do you like Guinness?
Love Guinness.
Okay. Oh, good.
Love Guinness. I have to tell you, I'm not much of a beer drinker.
Mm-hmm.
And in college, I would have that one bottle of beer that I would stick in my back pocket as I danced. I was big into dancing, but you know, beer is something you did and everybody did, but I didn't really like the beer. So I would drink a light beer, a mm-hmm. Coors or a Lone Star or something, but I didn't like the taste of it at all. Now I'm in the army. I'm not liking the taste of beer much better. And then we go to Ireland while I'm still in the army. So it wasn't to Dublin. It wasn't to the brewery, but we took a family trip and we went to Ireland and we go to a classic Irish pub. Okay. So I know I'm going to have a Guinness, but here's this dark black foamy topped beer. go in the pub and the bartender takes 20 or 30 minutes to pour the beer. You just don't pour a Guinness. It has to settle the head, It's got, and they got to give you the full glass of the beer. So he finally hands the beer to him and he's looking over at the bar. It's a dark, kind of dank bar, typical Irish pub.
Yep.
And I've got the glass of Guinness in my hand, if you can just picture this. And I'm just kind of staring at this beer with trepidation, right? Because all I drink is light beer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, here, this thing is obviously going to have a lot of
aftertaste. And you're in the pub, so you don't want to.
And the bartender senses this as well. And he looks at me and he says, "Okay, laddie, just tilt your head back and take a bite out of it." Okay. So I take a sip of this beer, a big sip, and I'm expecting this very harsh, dark beer aftertaste.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't get that. What I get is a beer version of an Irish cream soda. It was smooth, creamy, and it just went down.
Mm-hmm.
So I took another sip, and it was the same.
Yeah.
And then I drank the glass like it was water. Glug, 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 glug. And it was gone. Now the bartender's just looking at me. So we chatted for a while. We left the pub. We were doing family games that night. But I stopped at the store, and I bought a six-pack of Guinness. That was the first Guinness I'd ever had.
Mm-hmm.
And we're playing games, and I'm just drinking the Guinness like water. And finally, my daughter looked at my wife. She says, "Mom, what is with Dad and the beer?" So it's kind of a revelation. You know, I never really liked the taste of beer, but even to this day, I love the taste of Guinness.
So how did you discover this book?
That is an excellent question. I know it was after we went to Ireland in 2015. Someone gave me this book as a Christmas present.
Oh!
But I've asked my mom and my wife if they gave it to me, and they said they didn't. So I don't know who gave it to me. So my wife and I just went on a trip to Las Vegas. So when we go on vacation, there's a lot of chill time for us. And so I'm always looking for a book. What book am I going to read on this trip? And so I've got every room in my house has got floor-to-ceiling bookshelves.
Mm-hmm.
Books in all over that. We have thousands of books in our house. And so I was going through one of the book racks, and this book just jumped out at me. And I pulled it off the shelf, and I started flipping through it, realizing I'd had it for a while, and
mm-hmm.
I'm thinking, well, I'm sure I've read this book, but I didn't recognize it. So I thought, that's going to be a good book for the trip. So as I'm reading in Las Vegas, very early on in the book, I would have known if I'd have read this
yeah.
book before. I never read this book.
Wow.
So someone gave it to me. It's been sitting on my shelves.
Waiting.
Waiting. And fabulous read. Cannot recommend it enough. I think you should be drinking this. You should be drinking a Guinness
with
while
this.
You're
anything else would be kind of blasphemous.
Yeah, it feels here. Like if you tried to pick up anything else, the book would just catch on fire.
It would. And the great part about Mansfield, because it almost seems like if I'm writing a book about beer and I'm writing about this family and a very successful business, and they use that business to help a lot of other people, I mean, what else do I need to do? But
mm-hmm.
he seems to need to justify the role of beer in life anyhow. So, you know, back to the history of beer and why people would craft
yeah.
their own beer and even drink beer. So he gets into a part of the book where beer is healthy for you.
Yep.
I don't know about that because especially Guinness is very caloric. So
yeah.
I don't know.
Maybe back in the day where calories were hard to come by,
I mean,
and clean water
like
was hard to
bread,
get.
Essentially.
Yeah.
So.
I think all that's useful.
Yeah,
he
maybe
goes
not right
to the
now.
The fact that there was much worse in society. So society, especially in Ireland, had drunkards and,
mm-hmm.
and people in the streets and people that were suffering from overindulgence of gin and whiskey. So
mm-hmm.
he goes down the path that beer is just a much healthier alternative. It wasn't meant to get drunk on. It was meant for us to sit around and relax and talk and
mm-hmm.
enjoy. And it was a healthier option. So I'm going with that.
So his is the equivalent of saying, if you make your burger at home, it's a healthier option than getting a burger at a fast food place.
Now, I'm asking this because I know it's kind of a big deal. Like in Ireland, were the Guinness family Protestant or Catholic?
Protestant.
Okay. I suppose that is
kind
a big deal in Ireland.
Wesley. I remember the name Wesley, and those of you listening will know that name, like Calvin, like others, more than I will, but Protestant.
Okay.
Okay.
I kind of figured if they were kind of going off into the ministry.
So is this mostly a history? Does it have any divisions between, like, the history of the family and the current company, or is it just a mixture throughout?
It's a mixture. Okay. So it starts with the history of beer, because before I can give you a book, I got to tell you why beer is important. Yeah. The history of beer. Everyone,
why does this book matter?
Beer in the church. You got to set that, kind of wet the palate,
yes,
if you will. Then we go into the family. So the history of Arthur Guinness and his family, how he got into brewing beers, then how he finds this plot of land and he actually builds. Yeah. So then he builds on the company itself and how the company grows and how the other people in the Guinness family and the legacy carry on the business and how the business goes on. But really, really interesting, Guinness in its day, 17, 1800s, 1920s, very, very, very progressive company. And there's a part in the back of the book where it talks about the five principles of Guinness. And I won't go into all the five principles, but I'll talk about the last one, which is invest in those that you would have invest in you. So I had to keep reading that and thinking about that. Invest in those that will, like me and you, if we work together, invest in those that you would have invest in you. So Arthur Guinness's philosophy was, if I want my workers to do good work for me and Guinness, then I have to invest in them.
Yeah.
And he did it in a way that was over the top.
Mm-hmm.
Guinness was by far and away the best compensated business in Ireland. The workers for Guinness made 10-20% more than anyone else, but he took it much farther than that. The homes in Ireland at that time were awful. So he built homes all around for the workers. He brought in doctors and nurses and pharmacists so that people could have on-site medical treatment. He invested in them and let them go to schooling to learn trades, woodworking, and various different crafts. He brought in concerts and culture. When the war came along, World War I and World War II, some of his workers went to the war. He continued to pay the family half of their salary. He sent them beer to enjoy while they were deployed. And he guaranteed their job when they returned.
Wow.
So the book spends a lot of time, first, the history of the beer, the history of the family, who carries on the business. But it spends a lot of time of what good Guinness did, first for all the workers, then for the city, you know, in the country of Ireland, what all that they did philanthropically. So there's principles that, as I mentioned, there's five of them that are at the end of the book, but that's the most prominent one. Arthur Guinness and his family, very much a family of faith, truly believe that they were there to use the talents that God gave them. And they believe that the beer baking business was a talent God gave them. And God gave them that talent to invest in others and to make the lives of others great. And I think they did it magnificently.
This feels like a very good book to read if you want to feel like lighter and refreshed. Like if you want to feel like, you know, the world is great. Yeah, gonna get a Guinness and read this book about how nice it is to give back to people.
lot of different tangents of the book. I finished the book, put the book down, and I only had one thought. Well, two. One, I wish I had read the book before we made our trip there. But the very next thought is I'm going back. Because I really do want to see, you know, this is a multi-million dollar plant that's pumping out beers all over the world now. But I'll see it in a completely different light.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And a new perspective.
The book talks about some previous workers of the plant. And their thoughts are, I wish it hadn't grown to what it is now. I wish it's still what it was back then.
Yeah.
So they are probably not as investing in the world.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a big culture. Times have changed now. But they remember the time in 1920 when the company was a little bit smaller, invested a whole lot more in their people. And, and some of the workers that they talked to in here, they missed those days.
Okay. Okay. That's all I can think of.
Yeah. It sounds very interesting. I like a good historical perspective that also makes me want to drink beer.
Well, it reminds me, and I don't remember how I told you this or Katie this when we were setting this up. It reminds me of the history of the world in seven glasses.
Yes.
We're just focusing on one
glass.
Just on one company.
One company's glass.
Yep. Yeah, well, this one you get to pick, you know, and search for God and Guinness. You can take the God route. You can take the Guinness route.
Yeah.
You can put them two together. But you're going to be thirsty reading the book.
Yes.
I was kind of thinking that.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you for joining us. And stay tuned next week for more fantastic book recommendations.
Bye.
Bye.